from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made on one historic election night, and depending what side you were on, it was a great night or one of the hardest, probably, that you've had to get through. For Democrats, it felt a lot like 2016, and probably for Republicans as well. They were optimistic Republicans going in, but once again, a lot of polling undersampled Donald Trump's support. Just about every county, there's a few examples here and there, but almost every county across the country moved right in some way. This is true in New York City's five boroughs. It's true in a lot of places. And yet in our region, incumbents did very well, and Democrats in our region outperformed the Democratic Party nationally. They really didn't see any erosion, a lot of dominant victories for the incumbents, and that includes three of my guests this hour. They're going to talk about their own races, how they did, what they learned in this particular election cycle, and then we'll zoom out and we'll take a look at what is going on nationally and how they see some of the fundamentals, whether there is change coming even at the state level. So a lot to discuss this hour. Let me welcome our guest, reelected as Monroe County Clerk, Jamie Romeo, is back with us. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
And by the way, Jamie was a former party chair in a past life. How long ago was that now?
Oh, getting close. I want to say it was about 8 years, because 2015 was when I was first filled in a remaining term, but I was chair during 2016.
Oh, you were chair?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So, well, welcome back here.
Absolutely.
Deja vu for
Deja
you.
Deja vu.
Welcome to two reelected members of the New York State Assembly. Jen Lunsford is back. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. And actually, Jamie was chair when I started running for office. She's the one who tricked me into this.
A lot of connections this hour. Welcome to Harry Bronson, reelected as well to the State Assembly. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan. And since this is the Jamie show, Jamie used to work for me when I was the minority leader of the county legislature.
Where were you in 2016, where were you, Harry Bronson?
2016, I was in the Assembly.
You were in the Assembly then, yeah. Well, you were first elected when?
2010.
2010, okay.
During the Republican Tea Party wave.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, well, it's interesting you say that. Actually, that's not a bad place to start, because 2010 was, there was a lot of this Tea Party sentiment, kind of a quasi-libertarian, but there was some nativism and a lot kind of tinged there. If you remember, that was the year that Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert did their rally to restore sanity and or fear. And so all of these things are happening, and it feels like a lifetime ago. Mm-hmm. So what's happening right now feels, Republicans feel like it's a permanent shift. Mm-hmm. Democrats might feel like despair will never lift. But what we know in American politics is, at least in this century, there is a win, then there's a realignment, then there's a loss, then there's a win. I mean, are you feeling that sense, or do you feel like, you know, a lot of despair on this week, Harry?
A little bit of both. I do think there is some of that. You know, you had a Republican wave in 2010, and it has flip-flopped a few times since then. So I'm hoping there's... you know, I'm not sure it's realignment, but, you know, the pendulum swings left, then it swings right. I'm hoping that we can swing back again. So that gives me hope. There is a lot of despair, though, because, to quote the president-elect, promises made, promises kept. And he's made promises about mass deportation. He's made promises about... you know, how he wants to run the country, which is much more of a dictatorship style of management, if you will. He wants to cut taxes for the wealthy. And then if you apply Project 2025, which I strongly believe is his plan, since 38 people wrote that document, 31 of them are part of the Trump team. You know, they want to attack labor unions. They want to attack my community, the LGBTQ community, and we can get into all of that more. They even are questioning whether or not we need civil services anymore, whether or not we need public employee unions anymore. So he wants to get rid of the green chips and the Inflation Reduction Act, both of which New York State would benefit tremendously. Micron may not even come here at this point because none of that is set in stone. And if they're able to overturn those two pieces of legislation, then we're in big trouble here in New York. So that's where the despair comes from.
Assemblymember Lunsford, again, all of our guests reelected by comfortable margins, and we'll talk about the races coming up here. What felt, as a Democrat, what felt darker to you, 2016 or this year?
2016, I think, really hit us out of nowhere. I fully expected a landslide win for Hillary. I remember my son was 8 weeks old, and I had every expectation that he was going to have a certain kind of world. So the fall that day was so precipitous. Here, we knew this was a possibility. Mm-hmm. This is also something that we've done before. Mm-hmm. I know people feel sadness and despair, and I'm going to tell you, I processed all of those emotions between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. that day.
That was it.
By 5:30, I was full in anger. I will be in the anger zone for the next year. I've put up stakes. This is where I'm going to live. But I'm just like, get your shoes back on. We got to go out. Mm-hmm. In 2016, we were in the streets by Monday. I have organizing meetings tonight. We know what to do. 2025 is a blueprint. At least we know what he's doing this time. And I am ready to rock. This is where I am now. I don't have the luxury of despair, and none of us do. Put your shoes back on. We got to go.
Well, County Clerk Jamie Romeo is here, comfortably reelected. Do you feel that way?
I think I definitely have to agree, and it's not just because I text and talk to these two very often. But one of the things, and I know that immigration and migrants were discussed previously on this show.
Yeah, in the last hour, yep.
And one of the things that I want to kind of as an example of, you know, Trump says he wants to deport 20 million people. But then one of the things that we have to, and I know I've had this conversation with a few folks, we have to remember, what is it going to actually take to make that happen? He doesn't just snap his fingers and that happens. Who's going to do the work? Who's going to pay for that? What's going to happen when our domestic food supply then tumbles because all of a sudden farm workers are getting deported? And then what's going to happen to those businesses that were relying on that workforce and we've now deported them? There's a lot of things that he says, a lot of things, but we all have to remember that there's a lot of other things that have to happen. And that's where organizing, being vocal, being persistent, talking to all your members of Congress, every level of government, as they're trying to go through these decision makings, just like the first 2 years of the first Trump administration, there were a lot of things that were asserted. But we have to not put our heads in the sand now. I think we're all going to go through that process of dealing with this. And, you know, whether we knew that this could happen or not, I always say that when you run an election, you always have to envision losing, because you can't really run a good election if you can't envision losing. But it's one of those things where it. Even as the president, there is still a lot of parts of government that he's going to need help dismantling. Just to make a weird Star Wars analogy, people are like, oh, no, Palpatine has returned. Like, he's not Palpatine, guys. Palpatine was like a strategist and a very, very smart, evil person. Like, I don't think I want to give him that much credit. We have to see who he surrounds himself with. But it's going to take a lot more than just him and his immediate circle to make some of these things happen. And that's where the resistance comes in. That's where making sure we're all still active comes in, and making sure that we just don't give up.
Let me take a specific issue that you all have touched on, and then I will ask you in your individual capacities, given you are Democrats who are not thrilled with this result of the national election, what you see your role as to possibly legislate or deal with in various ways. But you bring up deportation. So in the last hour, we talked to a panel about this pretty significant shift rightward in the Hispanic vote. Donald Trump won Hispanic men outright by almost every exit poll that's out there. And I know data will continue to trickle in and shift a little bit, but there's no doubt the Hispanic vote moved very far to the right compared to past elections here. They saw what Donald Trump was selling and they liked it. Hispanic men wanted it. And Luis Martinez last hour said, if you look at the deportation plan, if it's 12 million, Trump has said it could be as much as 20 million. And he included Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, who are here legally that he would like to declare are no longer legal. That's going to be a whole can of worms. Who knows what's going to happen? But let's say it's 12 million. Luis Martinez claims that our immigration system is so kind of screwed up that we've got roughly 12 million people from countries around the world who just can't get processed in time because we've got a border crisis at the southern border. And as long as we build that wall and deport 12 million people, we can open 12 million slots for people to come in from Asia and from other countries. And they'll just fill a lot of those spots and we won't actually see a ton of disruption. What do you think, Assemblymember Bronson?
Well, first of all, I think Jamie's correct. He's not going to be able to do all this stuff on his own, unfortunately. We know he's going to have a U.S. Senate on his side. We don't know how big that margin is going to be. Hopefully it stays as close as possible with just 52. We don't know where the House of Representatives is going to be. In order to do a lot of stuff, they're going to have appropriations. And they're going to have a lot of help from Congress. But unfortunately, if the numbers keep going the way they are, he may have a green light for 2 years to do an enormous amount of harm. But I do think that there can be pushback. If he does everything he says, then he really is going to start angering groups of people. But we can't ignore. Do we need to, fix our immigration situation? Absolutely. We had a solution to that. Trump wouldn't go with that. He wants to do something more drastic, and I think he will. The question is, to what degree will he do it more drastically? And to what degree will, even in the Senate with 52, there's two senators who aren't aligned with Donald Trump, Alaska and Maine. Will they hold true to their beliefs? Will they counter some of the things he's trying to do so that he doesn't get it through Congress? And that's what I'm hopeful for. I'm hopeful that there is some constraint put on him because of the system that we have here in the United States of government.
Jen Lunsford, do you think there's 12 million legal immigrants waiting to just take the place of anybody that would be deported?
I happened to hear that portion of your show while I was driving over here, and I don't think that the people in France with their money for attorneys are coming here to pick soybeans. I don't think that's where those particular immigrants are going to be finding work. I also don't think that there's actual chairs that people are sitting in, and when they stand up, we put someone else in it. This idea that there are slots that undocumented people are taking, when we by definition don't document undocumented people, I'm swirling with just how insane and no sense it makes. So, no, I think that Luis Martinez is not the immigration expert he thinks he is.
Okay, so do you see massive economic disruption in a mass deportation plan?
1,000%, of course, yes.
Is there anything that you plan to do as a state legislator? I mean, I don't know what the remedy. I don't know what Democrats at various levels of government think they can do about this. If you don't want these things to happen
at the state level, we're so limited in what we can do with regard to immigration.
Okay. Yeah.
However, many of the farm workers who are here in the U.S. and here in New York are H-1A. They are documented. They are here legally. And hopefully, we can just get Trump to pass this bipartisan immigration bill that he held up so we could take credit for it, fix it.
There you go.
But this guy had an infrastructure week every week for 4 years and never got it done. So I'm actually not terribly concerned with his ability to actually accomplish things.
And the only thing I want to add onto this is that I know we're trying to focus on what government could do or how government could respond. But the truth is, and I think to agree with different issues, we saw this during Trump's presidency, there's going to be large economic forces, potentially even allies of his, that are going to be significantly impacted by trying to crash some of these economies if he actually goes through with it in the way, in the manner that he's saying. And that's where it might not be something that is seen, but there are huge impacts to the things that he wants to say. And now that we're in the reality of those things happening, I would not be surprised at all that even in his own circle, there's some people, okay, I know you said this, but we can't
fluoride out of the water.
Right. Well, and this is one of those where, you deport so many different people that are currently in the United States, a large amount of them working and contributing and paying taxes. And I think the Haitian migrants is a perfect example where you had the Republican governor of that state saying, please don't.
Yeah, Mike DeWine.
They helped us with rebuilding this community. And those are the type of things that may not be loud and we may not hear them, but those are also the kind of things that are going to start happening, which is why we got to push on all ends.
On the issue of health, it does look like RFK Jr. is going to be given the keys to the health castle. I wish there was a camera in studio to capture some of the reactions I just saw from our Democratic guests. RFK Jr. has spent years peddling not just nonsense about vaccines, but really dangerous nonsense. And now he is saying that step one on January 20 will be orders to take fluoride out of drinking water. And then there will be aggressive work it will start by changing the communication about vaccines. So the federal government will start communicating that vaccination is maybe not a good idea, and with a goal of eventually removing vaccination requirements for students in schools and for kids. Is there anything I'm looking at federalism. I'm looking at state by state. Is there anything New York State does in regards to that? I mean, if that's, I don't know how this works. If federally, if that comes down on fluoride and vaccines, is that just where we're going? Or what do you think, Jen Lunsford?
Can someone check to see if the American Dental Association has been given money to RFK? Because that's really going to boost business if you take fluoride out of the water. You know, Albany doesn't put fluoride out in their water. I actually think that's wild.
Who?
Albany. There's no fluoride in the water in Albany. I just think that that's interesting.
That explains so much.
There's so much federalism at play here. Like, what we put in our water and how we treat our water isn't just a state issue. It's like a county by county issue. And I kind of dare you to try to regulate that at the federal level. Yep. I actually don't think you can. Mm-hmm. So the amount of lawsuits that would happen, never mind just blatant ignoring of it. Yes. They don't have a code, I think, about how we have to regulate the fluoride in our water. I think that these are a lot of big ideas that fail to recognize how limited federal power actually is when it comes to the everyday execution of a lot of government work.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a really good point that Jen just raised. There is an awful lot of overlap with federal law and state law and then all the way down to local ordinances. But I think whether those are two good examples, but I think we need to go back and look and see what can we do to make sure we take care of health issues and things of that nature at the state level. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, I think I just saw as I was coming in, Gavin Newsom is calling his legislature back into session to put things in place to prevent some of the things they think is happening. Will happen at the federal level. I think we as New York State legislators, we should do the same thing and go through it. I mean, Proposition 1 is a perfect example of responding to what we thought might happen at the federal level. I mean, part of it was in response to the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe versus Wade, but part of it was in anticipation of what was going to be there. Embodying in our Constitution protections on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression was in direct response to what was in Project 2025. We knew that there was stuff that they were planning on doing, and so we wanted to make sure that there were protections at New York State level. And I think we should go through and look at a whole bunch. I mean, you know, in a few weeks we're going to be in our retreat with our Democrat majority in the assembly, and I certainly want to bring up discussions about what can we start doing to hopefully put the brakes on some things that we might see happening at the federal level.
Okay. Anything you want to add there, Jamie?
Only that what the assemblywoman talked about, and just as county clerk, there's a lot of things that the county clerk's office does that we don't make the decisions for. They're federal programs or state programs. They're in different statutes, but I, as county clerk, make the decisions on how to implement them and how to actually provide those services in the community. And county clerks across the state vary in a number of different ways with very particular things. But again, it's one of those, there's no enforcement. If we get to a place in this country where there is a squad that's trying to go to jurisdiction to try to force local officials to take on, like, let's not get to that place. But that's one of those things of where there's so many things. Government comes down and is intertwined, I think, to the point everyone said, in so many different ways that people don't recognize. It takes a lot for these type of changes to get implemented. And that's where, you know, I only think of, because again, in 2016, it's why I had to stop watching it, The Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. It was, why were they able to make some of those things? It's because they were able to basically create that armed force. And I don't think we're in that place in this country, but I think those are the things that we need to continue to make sure we're being vigilant about, but just we need to remember.
And that might be where the pushback comes from Trump supporters.
Right.
I mean, a lot of Trump supporters are all about states' rights. So if he starts dictating stuff at the federal level, forcing states to do certain things, you know, there may start being a backlash against you know, those kind of demands and saying, wait a minute, we're a states' rights party. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not telling us how we're going to handle X, Y, or Z.
And I think you're going to see that with the Supreme Court as well, that, you know, while there are some sycophants there, Neil Gorsuch is a law robot and he is a strict constructionist. And if you try to push too hard, he's going to stop you because it does not compute. So I think that he will be, I think, hoisted on his own petard in a few places where he has people he believes are his allies but are not loyal followers.
No, that's interesting. I'm reading Gorsuch's new book that's out now. It's called Overruled, and it is essentially a catalog of the most egregious cases of a Byzantine American legal system that ends up with unintended consequences. And his view is there should be far fewer laws, not more, generally speaking. So that would be an interesting outcome there. Okay, I'm going to go in a number of different directions here, but one other kind of 30,000-foot view question for our guests. And we're talking to three people who won comfortable re-election this week. They're all Democrats. Jen Lunsford, Harry Bronson to the New York State Assembly, Jamie Romeo, Monroe County Clerk. You know, we've been talking about this election this week as if it's kind of 1984 in Reagan Mondale, and it is not. It's not 49 out of 50 states. I don't know that we'll ever see that again. Though, again, who knows? I make no predictions on the future anymore, ever. But when the final votes are counted, because California takes something like 9.5 years to count an election, I don't know what they're doing out there, but it takes a while. We're going to probably still see Trump with a popular vote victory. It's going to be close, and we're going to end up with Trump with a very comfortable Electoral College victory. He's going to win Wisconsin by around 1 point, Michigan by around 1 point, Pennsylvania around 2.5 points. And that's the election. We're still very closely divided. But in the modern American context, this was a comfortable win for Republicans and for Trump. And in many ways, it looks like a rejection. It might be of the moment, might be of inflation, might be of a lot more of Democrats, or at least of the political left at the moment. Jen Lunsford, do you view it that way? And if this is a rejection of the moment of Democrats, what does the party need to learn from this?
So I think when we parse all these numbers, we're going to see a lot of people stayed home. And if you look at 2016, the same thing was true. More people didn't vote at all than voted for Donald Trump. In 2016, Donald Trump won by the equivalent of the population of a football stadium. And when you look at Wisconsin, the third parties there pulled more of the vote than Trump won by. You know, we're going to be seeing this, and there's going to be a lot of finger pointing. And I think when you ask people why they voted this way or why they didn't, asking people why they didn't vote at all is actually the more important question. Mm-hmm. How did any of this fail to grab you? What is it that you don't see government doing for yourself? And I'm going to transition a little bit here to why we won so comfortably in this room, because I think we're really, really good at telling people what we do. I think we're really, really good all the time, not just when we're running for office, telling people what government does, why we do it, and how we're delivering for you. And because people don't have a common media, people don't have one place they get their news, or even the same 10 places they get their news, they get them from random people on YouTube who have no journalistic training or editorial rules. We don't have a common narrative of reality. We're not working from common facts. People voted for Donald Trump because eggs were too expensive a year ago. Eggs are back down to where they were before, but they feel like eggs are too expensive. We can't grab people with an actual piece of information anymore, and they're voting on vibes. Mm-hmm. And we lost the vibe war. That's what it comes down to.
Well, if that's the diagnosis, what are you going to do about it?
We keep doing a great job here. We keep working really hard here. I can yell at my colleagues in other states. We can keep pushing. But all I can do is control what I do here and keep doing good work and making sure that we are activating as many people as possible to continue their work on the ground.
But too. Connected to that, I mean, you bring up vibes. Part of what you're saying, I think, is that a lot of where we are right now would not have been possible a generation ago because we didn't have such a fragmented media landscape where you can just pick whatever mm-hmm. is sort of in your little alley and stay there forever mm-hmm. and not experience what other people are, whether it's news, podcasts, influencers. I love that term. It's great. It's really great. But, you know, I mean, there was a lot of hand-wringing in the last couple of weeks about whether Kamala Harris should have gone on Joe Rogan, which, I mean, in my view, of course she should, and of course Donald Trump should, and John Fetterman did the week before the election. And I mean, sure, that he's the most popular podcast in the world right now, whether people like it or not. And there are all kinds of different little silos. Now, her campaign tried to go to some of them. Donald Trump went to a ton of them, a lot that catered to a lot of Barstool and young men, Barstool Sports and young men. And I don't know what, is that part of what you're talking about, understanding where the vibes are, like understanding that you have to reach people in different ways?
You really, it's so much harder now because you have to go to where people are. I advertise on Joe Rogan. Like when I'm doing my political ads, Joe Rogan's one of the places we target. And you should, I'm actually always shocked by the amount of Joe Rogan viewers who are engaging with my posts. Mm-hmm. But it is very, very challenging now. And remember, she had 100 days. Like she actually had a great comms plan for 100 days. But I have constituents who think I control the weather, and not like fringe people. Like they really think we have a weather machine. I don't entirely know what to do about that. Like that's the place we live, mm-hmm. where there are people who truly, deeply believe conspiracy. And I don't think that diversifying media is enough to deprogram people. But, you know, Nixon won a mandate after Watergate. People forget that that next election was post-Watergate, and he had a bonkers, overwhelming landslide victory. Find me a person today that regularly volunteers that they voted for him that second time. There's a way to come back.
Okay, but one more thing before I turn to your colleagues then. Is there anything that your party is regularly doing on policy that you look at and say, all right, this has not worked, this has been a mistake, we need to come back from this?
I wish that we communicated more. I wish that we talked to people more about what it is we actually do. Mm-hmm. Because I know that a lot of people felt like we weren't doing enough on kitchen table issues. We weren't doing enough on inflation. We weren't doing enough on the stuff that matters to their everyday lives. But we are. We are doing that. And I think here, the people in this room did a good job of explaining that.
Which is why you think you won so
quickly. Yeah, the state party didn't do that. You know, our people in other states that I was looking at federally weren't doing a good job of meeting people there. So much of this election,
there's not one issue that you look. So here's an example. This morning I read in the Atlantic a piece with some Biden staffers, and this always happens after an election. When you lose, there's a little bit of recriminations, or people are kind of going like, well, you know, if we would have done it my way. Some Biden staffers feel like replacing him was a mistake. I don't think anybody in his administration under these fundamentals, from what we're learning this week, would have won. However, people have the right to think so. But one of the things they pointed to is the number one or number two ad buy for Trump across the country was biological boys and girls sports. And it was Trump, Kamala is for they, them, Trump is for you. That's the tagline. It was the number one or two, number two ad buy in swing states across the country. And one of Biden's staffers told The Atlantic that Joe Biden would have at least come out and said, we have to be kind, we have to show grace, but I do not think there should be boys and girls sports.
I didn't say that, and I won what is effectively a marginal landslide. I won by 13 points, and I didn't say that because I didn't have to say that because that's not a real problem. Mm-hmm. And by saying it's not happening, first off, you're giving credence to the idea that it exists. Also, you're hurting transgendered people. Mm-hmm. You're marginalizing transgendered people. I represent transgendered people. And I need them to know that I see them and I feel them. And I'm not going to let people hurt them because they're afraid, because they get the boogie-oogies because of them. There are like maybe 1,000 trans kids in schools in New York State, and the vast majority of them aren't playing sports. This isn't an issue. And mm-hmm. when you let Trump tell you what the problem is and you respond to him, that's where we start losing. And I think that's what was happening federally.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree with my colleague. This is an issue. It's a very serious issue. The reality is, I think, we as a Democratic Party nationally made a mistake because, as Bill Clinton put it, it's the economy, stupid. This was about the economy. You can disagree all you want. Egg prices may have gone down a year ago. You can disagree with that. You can disagree with the fact that gas prices aren't as high as they were a year ago. But there are a lot of people in America who feel that they're not doing as well off today as they were under Donald Trump. Agree or disagree with that, that's what they feel. They also feel that they're being othered. I talk about being othered all the time with my LGBTQ plus community. And we have been. And we're being attacked. And that's fear-mongering. That messaging that we heard nationally through the Trump campaign, that message we heard against Proposition 1, is fear-mongering and othering. That's what it is. But we have to be realists. People believe it. People don't understand the issue when it comes to our trans citizens. They don't understand the issues when it comes to our gender nonconforming citizens. They don't get it. It's wrong to message that way because it's pitting one group against another. But in this current context, we had a lot of people feeling they were being left behind from an economic standpoint, and that their buying power had been diminished and they just weren't able to make ends meet. Yet we allowed the other side to say, that's true. And oh, by the way, all those Democrats care about are guys who dress up as girls and people who are them instead of you. And we got so caught up in that piece and defending against that, we forgot that we also had to talk to these other people. I gave a presentation at the Downtown United Presbyterian Church the Sunday before the election. It was all about Christian nationalism. And I made the statement that one of the things I thought I needed to do a better job of, and you've all heard my mantra, and I talk about, you know, no matter who you are, you have the right to equity, justice, and an opportunity to succeed. But I rarely talk about white men. But I mean them. I'm including them, but I don't specifically say them. And I think we missed a point nationally not to acknowledge that we're talking to you too. It's not just people of color. It's not just the LGBTQ community. It's not just women. We're talking about you. You deserve equity and justice as well. And for me, that's where my messaging is going to change.
So you're saying young men who feel adrift from the Democratic Party,
yes.
you can make inroads, you can make change.
I think so. We're going to have to work at that. But we have to acknowledge that, you know, we often use this phrase, we got to meet them where they are. We didn't meet the voters where they are, mm-hmm. not this election. And that's what I think we have to change.
Okay. Do you agree with that part of the analysis, by the way?
I think obviously there's a disconnect, particularly with younger voters in general. But, you know, I represent a district that is overwhelmingly white, predominantly white. Most people in my – I have one of the lowest rental districts in the state. I have disproportionately educated people. I have very, very middle-class people. And I say this to my colleagues all the time, that when you focus so hard on issues of poverty, you're leaving out most of the state because there's people who qualify for nothing but don't make enough to get ahead. And what are we doing for that group of people? We're silent on them. And that's one thing I focus on tremendously is, what am I doing to put money back in your pocket? What am I doing to make things a little bit easier for people in my district who don't qualify for EITC, who don't get, I say this all the time, but it's true. We enhance child care subsidies. So families of four making up to $108,000 a year can get child care subsidies. That's for that middle class. Mm-hmm. And so many, especially, and I'm going to say young, I mean like 35 and under. I'm an older millennial, but people in my generation, they're not making strides. They're not buying houses. They're not going on vacations. They're not saving money. And they feel left out. They feel, and I think Harry is right here, othered, because to them, when we talk about people who are getting services, people are getting benefits, they see that as being given something. And even though the things we're giving them aren't lifting them into the middle class, they're like, where's my thing? Mm-hmm. I'm not getting anything and it's hard for me to. Mm-hmm. What can we do to show them that we're there for them too?
Jamie Romeo, do you think the party has made any missteps that you want to see corrected?
I think you kind of just heard great explanations of it, communications. It goes down to how we communicate. And again, I think that locally we're doing a great job, because I'm just going to give a plug. We right now have a Democratic Supreme Court candidate that is maybe 30-something votes ahead of the third highest Republican that might win this seat, although we have to count all the votes, and we need to count all the votes. Locally, we've been doing a great job of talking about making sure we're being really intentively inclusive to everybody. Because I know, like, when I think of whom Harry's talking about, in some years that's going to be my son. And I think it's important to make sure we're being intentionally inclusive for all those people. But it, One of the things I always wonk out about elections is that, and it makes me go back to like academia undergraduate, voting is a human behavior. And a lot of our human behaviors are based off of our feelings and our emotions. And that's where it's the, you know, we can try to create trends and do all these things where we're predicting or trying to make assertions on behalf. But at the end of the day, it's how did the voters feel? What are the things that are impacting the way that they're feeling? In all of the things that have led up to this, I think that making sure that we are meeting people where they are. And nationally, we are a very diverse country. It's very hard to do that. But one thing Democrats don't do well is champion our successes. And I think the Inflation Reduction Act was a great example. We did not talk about it enough. And we should have, you know, some people, well, I don't want to be gimmicky. We just need to get the work done. And that's going to be what matters. No, people need to know that you got the work done because someone else is just going to swoop in and say that they were a part of it or twist it around. And I think that's one of those things of where Democrats do need to get a lot better on not just getting the policy work done, but the messaging work done about making sure that people appreciate their government again. They know that the things that they're doing for them and they understand those impacts when they get felt.
Bess Watts sends us a note to say, agree 100% about the need to address white males. We need to reboot. If you live paycheck to paycheck, no one cares about Black Lives Matter or the LGBTQ community. That's from Bess. What do you think?
It's kind of what I was saying.
Yeah.
It's not that they don't care. It's what their focus is on. And I think, although we have to continue the fight, to make sure that all people are treated with fairness. I have to continue the fight on behalf of my community. I thought I won all the battles or most of the battles. We're going to have to keep fighting those battles, including here in New York State if Donald Trump is successful. But we can't ignore a group of people. We cannot ignore them. We have to communicate with them. We have to understand what their perspectives are, what their feelings are, and we have to try to communicate the best we can that we're trying to address those problems that they're facing.
We have a ton of emails and phone calls, and I haven't even mentioned any outreach number. And I have to take our only break, and then we're going to come back. If you're on the phone, we'll get you. If you've sent emails, we'll get as many as we can. Harry Bronson and Jen Lunsford going back to the New York State Assembly. Comfortable victories. Jamie Romeo, Monroe County Clerk. They're talking about why they were successful, what they are going to do in their own work, and especially in relation to what has been a kind of national earthquake election here. So we'll come right back with them and your feedback on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, our colleague Gino Finelli hosts the show. In the first hour, the Rochester City Council has deliberated for months on a bill to grant so-called good cause eviction protections for its renters. We'll discuss that issue. In our second hour, Rochester, like much of the nation, has seen changes to the craft beer industry locally. And no one knows more about this than Gino. Going to be a great conversation Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Don in Fairport says, no doubt that some immigrants will be deported under Trump directives, but the fear to our food supply is overstated. One only needs to look at the development of robotics in agriculture. Already picking strawberries today and using AI. Who knows when and where the next berry will be ripe for picking. Elon Musk is building robots for Mars. Why wouldn't he pilot them in America's back 40? Why not solve immigration with technology? The tech titans sponsored Trump. The payback will be replacing low-skilled labor with automation and robots. Touchscreens at McDonald's are just the beginning. It's from Don in Fairport.
That's a lot in there.
So I've actually gone to the Cornell Cooperative Extension and I've seen the farm robots. They're alarming looking. Cool. That technology is not scalable. It is not where we need to be. Maybe in 10, 15 years. Cool. What happens next week?
I also think that just puts any family farm out of business.
Yep.
So again, that's great. But there's a lot more consequences to these things. And if there's ever an easy solution, it's not going to work.
Patrick says, Donald Trump comes across like a late-night talk show host, and in the influencer economy, that is just gold. Everyone can say that he's just saying a bunch of nonsense that resonates with people if they want to hang their hat on that. I'm 42 years old. I gave up on social media, but good luck on unbrainwashing everybody on that. That's from Patrick. Okay. Anything you guys want to add to that? No? Okay. I'm going to spin off Patrick's point and ask you this. Jen, you talked about vibes. Patrick is saying that people didn't look at Donald Trump and say, oh, that guy's the only president who ever cheated and tried to steal an election. And police officers died. And that should be like antithetical to everything we believe in. They look at him and they say, you know, he's kind of brat. And he's kind of brash and kind of tough and in counterculture. And he sticks it to the establishment. He's got the vibe game down there for sure with a lot of young voters. He won men 18 to 29. I mean, that's something. That's a huge shift. That's a victory for Republicans big time. What do you do about that? Do you need candidates at the national level who have, I saw somebody say, well, the next Democratic candidate has to be someone with juice. I don't even know what that means, but I guess it means some of what Patrick is saying.
I think it's easy to be conservative. It's comfortable. Nothing's ever your fault. There's always a clear boogeyman. Good and evil are easy. Daddy will come and take care of you. Just let him do what he's going to do and everything's going to be easier. You don't have to think. You don't have to change. You don't have to try. Just vote for me and daddy's got you. And I feel like especially young men whose, you know, as similarly aged parents were married and had homes and they were, you know, on their own, they're not seeing that economic reality. Someone is telling them, that's not your fault. That's them's fault. I got you. Now, what happens when that doesn't happen for them? Mm-hmm. What happens when he doesn't deliver on that? Let's see if that sticks.
Okay.
So, I think it's a combination of both. You have to have the right messaging. You have to be telling people that you're going to be able to help them and things of that nature. But people have to also believe in you. And as much as I find it so hard to believe that people think Donald Trump is the answer, there are people out there who think he is.
Oh, tens of
millions. There are people out there who think he's going to take care of it. How he got that messaging out, given all the other stuff, is hard for me to comprehend, but he was successful with that.
I think the one thing, before I kick it over to Clerk Romeo, the one thing that I do think makes Trump a little different in American history is that, as Tom Nichols has written, his electorate does believe in him. When he says Trump will fix it, they largely believe that. But there is an element that says, but even if he doesn't, he will infuriate the people I hate, and that's also good. And so my life might not get better, but their life will get worse, and I'm in for that. That's an element that didn't really used to exist until the modern media.
And that's a very scary statement, but I think you're correct.
Clerk Romeo?
I think we also still live in an age where we have all for generations been socially conditioned to feel more secure when there is a strong man in charge. And I think that if I am a single mother that is struggling from paycheck to paycheck, I'm not thinking about January 6th. I'm not thinking about anything else but how can I make sure my kid gets to school safe, I have food in the refrigerator, and I have what I need to pay the rent and get ready for winter and buy snow boots. I'm not thinking about that. And it could just be one of those things where, again, I feel more secure if there's a guy who looks strong, who looks tough, and he's in charge.
And he says, I'll do it.
And he says, I'll do it. I don't have to think about it. I don't need to take on anything else. He's got it. And I think that as much as a lot of us saw that and believed in Kamala, there's still a lot of people that it's just the social conditioning we've all felt. You know, sometimes, if this guy's in the room, I'll feel safer. Is it because he knows Taekwondo? It's unfortunately, I think there's still a significant amount of our population that it's one of those unperceived things we might not realize is still in there.
In Parenton, this is Pat, I think. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Hi, I just want to make an opinion thing, and it is that please be gracious in winning as well as in defeat. My quick example for you is back in 2016, the guy across the street obviously voted for Trump Pence. And up went the flag for the flagpole for 4 freaking years. I had to look at that. Trump Pence. They lost in 2020. The flag changed. It said, don't blame me. I voted for Trump. That went until January 6th hearings. And by God, that must have worked a little because the flag went down. But unfortunately, they just won. And the flag is back up for Trump again. I'll have to look at that for 4 years unless the sun rots the flag. You know, as well as sun on the presidency may show how rotten it is. But they don't understand why we don't like them. And it's a nice guy. You know, he's a nice person. He offers to help and stuff. But I just don't understand the need to put it in your face whether you win or lose. You know, I put up political signs, But at 9 o'clock on election night, they're taken out and they go in my garage, win or lose. So that's just my opinion. Be gracious in winning, please.
Pat, thank you. No, we're in political flags forever territory now. I mean, it's really something that's different. But gracious in winning, gracious in defeat. I do hope whoever is listening to this right now, whatever, however you voted, I hope when you heard President Biden today, you recognized the grace there. That was a remarkable, remarkable Absolutely. Set of comments. It made me feel similar to how it felt watching John McCain in his concession speech in 2008. Remarkable. We are capable of it. We do not have to just go down this, everything is crass and coarse now, and no one is to be respected. And I'm not trying to be both sides guy. I'm just saying I think we can do it. I think there are models for it. Carly writes to say, people need to know how things work. Simplify language. Break things down. Delightful, snackable communications, not barrages of postcards and texts. Organize events that bring people together so that they don't feel like they're divided by identity politics. Build community and make it fun. This is our silver bullet. That's from Carly. How do you guys feel about that? Snackable communication. I like snackable. I like that.
Bagels with Bronson or something like that. I don't know. Certainly, I think there's some of that. I think we in Democrats, I think we can step back and see. I mean, sometimes we want to explain too much, get into the weeds and things of that nature. So there's some truth to making our communications a little bit more basic. I mean, still being true to our integrity and things of that nature, but get right to the point and say it. And I also just want to say, Evan, I listened to Joe Biden, and you're spot on. I listened to Kamala's concession speech as well. You know, this is what America, transition of power is supposed to be about, and it's supposed to be peaceful, and we're supposed to be respectful of everyone, no matter who they are. And how to, you know, love your country, love your neighbor, even if you don't agree with them. So it's I think that's important.
Well, maybe on that note, let me ask all of you then, you have history in elections, history of winning elections. You are used to constituents of all backgrounds reaching out to you for a wide range of reasons. Doesn't matter if they voted for you or not. They all have these smirks on their face. Like, we just alighted upon some truth. It's part of the job. What is your strategy for talking to people who you feel like, wow, we don't really have a shared reality? You are consuming whole different universe of information, but you're reaching out to our office either for constituent services or to talk about an issue. How do you start to bridge that? I mean, do you find you can do that, Harry Bronson?
I think we have to do that. I think we're pretty successful in my office in doing so. Sometimes it gets very difficult, but I usually try to find common ground first and see if we can start with that and then get into the more difficult conversation. It's harder if the other side really just wants to keep hammering on their position and you're wrong and things of that nature. But, you know, I said election night, I'm going to represent everybody of the 138th Assembly District, whether you voted for me or not. And I know that we have disagreement on some issues, but I'll work with them to try to find common ground.
What's the argument for Republicans who can't imagine voting for a Democrat?
So I primarily talk to people who don't agree with me. You know, my staff takes the easy calls. I take the hard calls. I spend substantially more time talking to people who don't agree with me. And the way to get me on the phone in my office is say, I need to talk to Jen. Like, you will get scheduled with me. I send literally like bespoke emails every time. I don't have form emails that I send to people who are talking to me. They get my answers every time. And I start every single communication with thank you for reaching out about this important issue. Because even if I think this is a less important issue, it's a super important issue to you. And in that moment, that's the issue that we're talking about. And I always try to give people the context of like, here's what I already understand about this issue. Here's what I don't know. Here's what I think about this. And I have always had a positive outcome where people feel like I've listened to them and like I've heard them and like they're getting some kind of response. I think in my 4 years, I've only had two constituents walk away angry with me. And it was just because the I wasn't the straw man they wanted me to be. Like, there was never going to be a positive outcome to that call. I have constituents who used to yell at me who now send me go get them emails because I converted them. Unfortunately, this is not scalable. I do it one at a time. I spend an inordinate amount of time doing it. But the way I do it is by taking everyone really, really seriously. Even if I don't agree, I take them seriously and I show them respect. It's hard to do on a grander scale, but by being respectful of people. I always think it's funny, and I'm sure you guys get this too, where someone's like, I voted for you and I need help. I don't care if you voted for me. Mm-hmm. You get service from me, whether my sign's on your lawn or not. Like, I don't look at people's voting record before like they get a constituent call back from me. I literally represent everybody. And I think my staff also, I have the best staff. I don't care what everybody else in this room says. I have the best staff who does a really good job of making people feel heard and delivering where we can.
I'm going to turn to Clerk Romeo to close the hour. I'll just say, if you want to see what it looks like in recent times of someone sitting down with 25 people who are coming at them, Pete Buttigieg did Jubilee, which is another one of these new platforms, very popular, with 25 undecided Michigan voters last week. It's worth spending the 50 minutes to watch that. Pretty good model. Jamie Romeo, you've been through a lot of elections. Do you think this is the low point for the party? Do you think that there will be a time where we're sitting here in the future and you say, how did we win so much?
No. I feel like I've been, at least locally. Locally, this is not a low point for the party. I've been in the low point of
the
party.
The party's doing very well locally.
Locally, we've done a point. But I don't know if I would necessarily say this is the low point for, because again, things change. But I will just say kind of to your other point, I think it's really important that elected officials and candidates, I know I've said this to a lot of people running for office, you have to be approachable and accessible to create the space to build trust. And that's where I think Harry and Jen do a great job. All of our local delegation does a great job doing that. And it's harder to do at a larger scale, but you have to build teams that are doing that same thing.
I do want to say before we go, somebody emailed, where was this, to say, so many emails. I always miss Alex. Alex, you always email too early. Alex, I am so sorry. No, somebody emailed to say that they were going, one of you was going door to door, and they told you that they were going to go by, that was Nick in Fairport. They were going to go by, he and his partner were going to go as Jen and Harry for
yes.
Halloween.
And I texted Harry that in the street. Then later I walked by and he waved me down so I could meet his wife too. Yes,
that's funny.
So listen, I appreciate the time. Thank you for having the conversation. Jen Lunsford, Harry Brunson, Jamie Romeo, all winning re-election. We'll talk to you tomorrow, everyone, on member-supported public radio.